Chapter 4 Planning for Future Service Needs. This chapter examines issues regarding the planning of disability services for service users, carers and their families in the New South Wales. The move towards a person-centred planning approach is examined, including the ability to plan for services at key transition points and barriers that may prevent effective planning from taking place. This chapter also examines issues in planning and service provision that result from variation in processes used to share sensitive client information between Ageing, Disability and Home Care, ADHC, and the New South Wales Department of Health, New South Wales Health. The issues identified and experienced by carers are wide-ranging and are examined in all chapters, with reference to specific carer issues being provided in Chapter 10. Recommendations in response to planning issues are included in this chapter. Service planning experiences. 4.1. The disability service planning experience of ADHC service users, carers, their family and funded organizations is examined in this section. Opportunities to improve the way that planning currently takes place are also identified. 4.2. Planning for an aging population and carers is examined in Chapter 4 and Chapter 10, and the role of individualized funding in planning for disability services is examined in Chapter 3. ADHC service planning. 4.3. Many inquiry participants expressed concern regarding the lack of planning that takes place when service users attempt to access disability services such as accommodation, case management and programs provided by non-government organizations. 1. Others, however, complimented ADHC on committing to a person-centered planning approach, which is believed to be a significant improvement in the provision of disability services in New South Wales. 2. 4.4. ADHC has committed to adopting a person-centered approach for disability service planning, which is a policy approach that is supported by inquiry participants. However, there are differing opinions regarding the level of person-centered planning that is currently implemented. 4.5. Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive of ADHC, explained that the recently completed New South Wales Disability Services Sector Directions for Industry Development report puts people with disability at the centre of the service system, rather than the services being at the centre. 3.1. See, for example, Submissions 5, 14, 15, 21, 25, 41, 58, and 98. 2. See, for example, Submissions 55 and 70. 3. Submission 31, Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Ageing, Disability and Home Care, P93. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 1. Legislative Council. 4.6. The New South Wales Disability Services Sector Directions for Industry Development report identifies a person-centered approach as one of the founding principles of the structure of the disability services system. The report includes the following principle: enhancing the voice, choice and control of people with disability. The structure of the disability services system will support contemporary evidence-based practice founded on person-centered approaches to facilitate greater choice, voice and control for people with disability in the context of an equitable service system. 4. 4.7. As part of the New South Wales Government's commitment to the first 5 years of Stronger Together, ADHC's submission acknowledged that services needed to be designed around the needs and circumstances of individuals and families, instead of a "one-size-fits-all" approach. 5. 4.8. Mr. Moore outlined some of ADHC's achievements resulting from the first 5 years of Stronger Together, including that or flexible approaches to service planning have been implemented to ensure families receive the most appropriate supports at the right time. 6. 4.9. ADHC was praised by Northcott Disability Services, who stated that ADHC's support for person-centered planning and local ADHC initiatives to implement this strength-based and family-focused approach in practice are a welcome development in the move towards personalization in disability services. 7. 4.10. Northcott Disability Services also expressed that ADHC's support for person-centered planning is a clear demonstration of ADHC's commitment to client-focused services. 8. 4.11. The author of Submission 55 commends ADHC on the consistency of service delivery and planning, in comparison to a non-government sector that is perceived to be providing less satisfactory services. 9. 4.12. However, Many service users and organizations did not support the view that ADHC undertakes adequate planning. 10. For example, Ms. Ross Armstrong, an official community visitor in northern New South Wales, official community visitor scheme, stated as a group of people, official community visitors have yet to see any really good examples of person-centered planning in the sector. Certainly it is not apparent in ADHC 11.4.13. Ms. Armstrong also believes that individual planning goals are more about meeting service objectives rather than focusing on individual support needs. This occurs in both ADHC 4. New South Wales Disability Services Sector Directions for Industry Development Final Report, June 2010, p. 10.5, Submission 31, p. 33.6, Submission 31, p. 40.7, Submission 70, Northcote Disability Services, p. 2.8, Submission 70, p. 10.9, Submission 55, Names Oppressed, p. 1.10. See for example, Submissions 4, 13, 14, 15, 39, 41, 94, 105 and 110. 11. Ms. Ross Armstrong, official community visitor, official community visitor scheme, evidence. The 27th of September 2010, p. 53.2. Report. Error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. Funded in ADHC. Provided services, although it is more prevalent in ADHC large residential centres. 12. Service users experience 4.14. Many carers and direct service users expressed frustration at the inability to plan disability services such as personal care support, supported accommodation and for transition at key life stages. 13. 4.15. The author of Submission 14, the mother and primary carer of Amy, believes that poor planning practices extend to ADHC-funded organizations. She described that a funded organization who was providing care to her daughter focused on expanding their business empire at the expense of person-centered planning. It should never be accepted practice to physically and or chemically restrain as a substitute for professional care and treatment, or to simply make the job easier for poorly trained, inexperienced or unprofessional staff, or in the absence of quality care and service provision and person-centered planning. 14. 4.16. The author of Submission 12 also expressed concern about an ADHC-funded organization. This service user has received personal care services one day a week from an ADHC-funded organization for over 3 years. However, is unable to receive this help at his requested time of 8.00 am. Even with 2 days full notice, he is only able to get help after 10.00 am, which affects his attendance at work and meetings. 15. 4.17. Ms. Janice Marshall is the mother and carer to her son Daniel, aged 22 years, who has autism, suffers from extreme anxiety, has bizarre behaviors, is very destructive and has an intellectual disability. Ms. Marshall identified issues regarding a lack of planning for accommodation services. She described the stress caused by the gap in future accommodation planning, expressing that unless you have walked in the shoes of our families, you cannot possibly know the anguish and stress under which we all live every day, where there is no hope and no planning for the future. 16. 4.18. Ms. Marshall explained that ADHC has no future planning process or transition strategy to help relieve the pressure from families hanging on by their fingertips. Ms. Marshall stated that parents have to die, be seriously ill, or abandon their loved one to even get into the system. This crisis-driven scheme causes widespread mental and physical illness within families, and often leads to family breakdowns, which ends up costing the state. 12. Submission 41, Ms. Ross Armstrong, official community visitor, official community visitor scheme, p. 4.13. See for example, Submissions 10, 12, 13, 14, and 15. 14. Submission 14, Ms. Carolyn Mason, p. 23.15. Submission 12, Names Oppressed, p. 1.16. Ms. Janice Marshall, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 21. Report. Error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 3. Legislative Council - and ADHC even more money than if they actually funded the accommodation in the first place. 17. 4.19. This view was supported by Ms. Estelle Shields, who stated, "It is only the people with a disability, whose parents have died, whose support arrangements have totally broken down, and who are homeless and destitute that are considered to be of sufficient priority to gain a supported accommodation placement. There remains no way we can plan for the futures of our sons and daughters, no way we can see them gradually transitioned into a new residential setting, no way we can avert the tragedy and trauma that will befall them when they will lose, in one fell swoop, the primary carer, the only home ever known, and the local community. 18.4.20. Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Director of the New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability, CID, also identified that the disability service system is crisis drive. She stated, at that the system seems to be driven by crisis. It is crisis responsive and this immediately places everybody on the back foot. 19.4.21. Ms. Bernadette Maloney, the mother and carer of Charlie aged 17 years, expressed that Charlie will soon require supported accommodation. She described her concerns for Charlie's future. There does not seem to be any forward planning, or any idea of seeing a need and trying to prevent a crisis. I have heard that most of ADHC's money is pooled in the Crisis Response Fund, which I think says a lot. 20.4.22. Further examination of issues regarding the delivery of supported accommodation services is provided in Chapter 6 and Chapter 10. From the perspective of service delivery and carers' experience, disability sector organisations' experience. 4.23. Ms. Berry reported that many members and callers to the CID report systemic complaints about ADHC, including a lack of planning and management services, including case management. 21.4.24. The New South Wales Association of Doctors in Developmental Disability, ADID, also identified issues regarding poor planning practices implemented by ADHC. Specifically, it was identified that accommodation is generally arranged in response to an emergency rather than as a planned process. 22.17. Ms. Marshall, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 21.18. Submission 15, Ms. Estelle Shields, p. 2.19. Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Director, New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability, Evidence, p. 11.20. Ms. Bernadette Maloney, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 18.21. Submission 39, Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Director, New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability, p. 16.22. Submission 94, Dr. Robert Leitner, Chairperson, Association of Doctors in Developmental Disability, p. 17.4. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 4.25. Poor planning resulting in emergency or crisis-driven accommodation services was a key issue raised by many inquiry participants, and are examined further in Chapter 5. 4.26. In its submission, the ADID also expressed concern that there is minimal planning for the future accommodation and respite needs of infants with complex medical problems. 23.4.27. Ms. Armstrong identified that the official community visitor scheme made 2,301 visits to disability services over the year to the 30th of June 2009. 24. And stated that many of the issues raised related to planning. Out of these visits, official community visitors identified 3,362 issues, of which 55% were resolved. The majority of these issues were about individual planning, environment, facilities, nutrition and health. There are visitable services out there that are not meeting the requirements under the Act. 25.4.28. Furthermore, Ms. Armstrong noted that some service users do not get any individualized planning in long-term respite placements. The much more difficult ones are like the young man who has been in a blocked respite bed for 21 over 2 years and never had any individual planning. It is said, he is an air respite center. We don't do individual planning. This young man is a permanent resident of a respite center until such time as we find him other accommodation, and therefore he should be delivered the same sort of service. There should be planning for this service. 26.4.29. Ms. Sarah Fogg, Policy Manager at the Benevolent Society, explained that planning for community care services is generally based around existing service types and configurations, which prevent unmet need from being addressed in different and perhaps cheaper ways. 27. What can be done to improve planning of disability services? 4.30. Ms. Emily Kasker, State Policy Coordinator, National Disability Services, suggested that the development of a comprehensive service planning framework could achieve more robust planning outcomes for people with disability. She stated that the framework should utilize the Industry Development Fund, IDF, and build upon the population-based planning framework which is already in place. The IDF is described in Chapter 2, 4.31. Ms. Kasker believes that a comprehensive service planning framework should have the following features. Take a long-term view of 5 to 10 years. 23. Submission 94, P7. 24. Submission 41, P1. 25. Ms. Armstrong, evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P48. 26. Ms. Armstrong, evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P48. 27. Submission 98, Ms. Sarah Fogg, Policy Manager, Social Policy and Research, The Benevolent Society, P5. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 5. Legislative Council - integrate planning at a statewide, regional, local, and organizational level. Be underpinned by robust data, evidence and comprehensive analysis of data and evidence. Provide tools and support to strengthen planning at an organizational level. 28. 4.32. To improve the coordination of planning at a local level, Ms. Kasker also recommended joint oversight and governance of planning involving both government and NGO representatives. 29. 4.33. Ms. Berry suggested that the provision of better information would help people with disability, including their families and carers, to access services that will best meet their needs. 30. Mrs. Diana Palmer, from Ideas New South Wales, also highlighted the importance of good access to information. 31. 4.34. Mr. Graham Opie, Chief Executive Officer, Motor Neurone Disease Association of New South Wales, recommended that timely and client-focused service delivery is required. 32. 4.35. In relation to improving disability service planning for Aboriginal people with disability, Mr. Damien Griffiths, Executive Officer of the Aboriginal Disability Network, ADN, explained that planning appropriately for Aboriginal people needs to involve a concerted outreach approach. 33. 4.36. In his submission, Mr. Griffiths explained what an outreach approach involves. The ADN often encounters situations where brochures are developed by various agencies and they may even have Aboriginal motifs on them to make them feel more culturally accessible. However, the ADN argues strongly that they are rendered meaningless without a concerted outreach approach to support them. That is, resources and effort must be made on the part of agencies to go to the people instead of continuing to expect Aboriginal people with disabilities and their families to come to them. This is a simple but major barrier for many Aboriginal people with disabilities and their families. 34. 4.37. The effectiveness of Stronger Together to address issues such as future planning was questioned by Ms. Marshall, who stated, Stronger Together 1 failed to address the issue of lack of future planning for supported accommodation and the total crisis and misery of families. 35. 28. Submission 32. Ms. Emily Kasker, State Policy Coordinator, National Disability Services New South Wales, P13. 29. Submission 32, P13. 30. Submission 39, P16. 31. Submission 52, Mrs. Diana Palmer, Ideas New South Wales, P5. 32. Submission 54, Mr. Graham Opie, Chief Executive Officer, Motor Neurone Disease Association of New South Wales, P2. 33. Mr. Damien Griffiths, Chief Executive, Aboriginal Disability Network, evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P39. 34. Submission 97, Mr. Damien Griffiths, Chief Executive, Aboriginal Disability Network, P4. 35. Ms. Marshall, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, P21. 6. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 4.38. Mr. Moore acknowledged that ADHC face difficulties in planning for the disability service system. He explained that discussion is currently underway about how we will be dealing with the second 5 years of the 10-year plan of Stronger Together. We built our modelling on the 2003 ABS data collection To do the initial 5 years of funding, we are having to build plans around the second 5 years on exactly the same 2003 data, 36.4.39. In addition, Mr. Moore explained that issues such as infrequent data collection, reactive research and a limited evidence base limit the ability to review past experience and to plan strategically for the future needs of people with disabilities. 37.4.40. Further examination of issues regarding disability services data is provided in Chapter 9, Committee Comment 4.41. The committee notes the difficulties faced by many carers, families, and service users when attempting to plan to use disability services. The impact that poor planning has had on many carers, families, and services users and the stress that this continues to cause is unacceptable. 4.42. The committee acknowledges the ongoing fear and frustration experienced by many carers who are not supported to plan for the future accommodation needs of their children. A service system that requires carers to reach breaking point before it provides appropriate services and support is not sustainable for the families or the system, and may act to increase pressure on the system in future years. 4.43. The committee notes that recommendations in Chapter 6 address the shortage of supported accommodation placements and recommend the provision of improved supports to people who register their need for an accommodation placement. 4.44. The committee notes with concern that individualized planning is not required to occur for people who reside in long-term respite placements. This example suggests that the support and planning received by service users is linked to service types rather than individual need. 4.45. The committee believes that this is not in accordance with the person-centered approach the government has committed to, and may result in some service users missing out on receiving appropriate planning and supports if they are not linked with the right service type. The committee recommends that all service users who are in or are likely to remain in long-term placements receive individualized planning. 36. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p. 4. 37. Submission 31, p. 61. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 7. Legislative Council - Recommendation 1. That the Minister for Disability Services ensure that all service users who are in or are likely to remain in long-term placements have access to individualized planning. That this is achieved through conducting a review of service users who have been in or are likely to remain in placements long-term and have not received individualized planning. Completing individualized planning for these service users is a matter of priority. Ensuring that individualized planning is provided for all accommodation placements that are or are likely to be long-term. 4.46. The committee agrees with Mr. Griffiths that an outreach approach should be implemented by ADHC to ensure that disability services for Aboriginal people are planned in the most appropriate way, and recommends the minister develop and implements such a program. The committee notes that further issues associated with the provision of appropriate services to Aboriginal people are examined in Chapter 5, Recommendation 2, that the Minister for Disability Services develop and implement an outreach approach for the planning of disability services for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. 4.47. The committee believes that service planning needs to move away from a crisis response if it is going to meet the needs of carers, service users and their families. The committee agrees with Ms. Kasker, who identified that a comprehensive service planning framework is required to achieve more robust planning outcomes, and recommends that the minister develop such a framework. 8. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. Recommendation 3. That the Minister for Disability Services convene a working group made up of government departments, NGO service providers, representatives of the Disability Council of New South Wales and other stakeholders to develop and implement a comprehensive service planning framework and consultation with disability service stakeholders to identify how the disability service system will develop over the next 5 years. That the framework identifies how and when policy priorities, including person-centered planning, will be incorporated into service provision, integrates planning at a state, regional, local, and organizational level and provides tools to strengthen planning at an organizational level, demonstrates how data and research will be used to inform development of the disability service system over time, is published on ADHC's website. 4.48. The committee acknowledges the many challenges faced by ADHC in attempting to plan for the disability service system, including poor access to robust data and evidence. The committee also acknowledges improvements in the disability service system that have been achieved by ADHC, including moving away from a one-size-fits-all approach towards a more person-centered planning approach. 4.49. The committee agrees that, although ADHC has committed to person-centered planning, there are few examples of where this has been implemented. Additional planning is required to outline how this approach will be rolled out across all funding programs and service types. The committee recommends that development and implementation of a person-centered approach for all funding programs takes place during Phase 2 of Stronger Together. Recommendation 4. That the Minister for Disability Services work in collaboration with the non-government sector and other relevant stakeholders to develop and implement a person-centered approach for all funding programs and service types during Phase 2 of Stronger Together. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 9. Legislative Council - Planning for Transition. 4.51. Many inquiry participants stated that they encountered challenges when trying to plan and access disability services during periods of transition in their lives, such as when leaving hospital or transitioning from high school. 38. 4.52. Northcote Disability Services explained that service users can experience variation in the services available, waiting list times, and the quality of services provided as they move through different life stages. Many carers and families of a person with a disability find the transition from childhood into young adulthood and the change in the system and level and type of services as an anxious time and the process difficult to navigate. When people should be exiting services due to age limits, they often have nowhere to go to receive the support they need. For example, some families still access children's respite services because the adult support available is insufficient to meet the family's needs. 39.4.53. In addition, Northcote Disability Services identified that transition points are usually the times when things go wrong, with Ms. Kerry Stubbs, Chief Executive Officer, stating, "I think a lot more thinking around specialist services at the right transition points would probably assist in some way before we get to the nirvana of a national disability insurance scheme, which is where we would all like to be." 40. Increased flexibility around exiting services, better transition planning, and increased capacity in the system would assist with this. Specialist services that support the transitions between life change points and systems would also improve outcomes for people with a disability and help facilitate communication between services and systems. 41. 4.54. In his submission, Mr. Moore acknowledged that the disability service system needed to be more flexible and responsive to people's changing needs as they move through their life stages. 42. Education. 4.55. Mr. Michael Kautz-Trotter, Director General of the Department of Education, acknowledged that the transition from school to adult life is a significant time for young people, including school leavers with a disability and their parents and carers. 43. He stated, "Transition planning commences well before a student leaves school. To maximize the post-school opportunities for students with a significant disability, including 38. See, for example, submissions 39, 67, 94, 100A, and 105. 39. Submission 70, P8. 40. Ms. Kerry Stubbs, Chief Executive Officer, Northcote Disability Services, evidence, the 26th of August 2010, P57. 41. Submission 70, P8. 42. Submission 31, P33. 43. Submission 64, Mr. Michael Kautz-Trotter, Director General, Department of Education, P8. 10. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. Intellectual disability. Schools focus on planning for this period with students and their families as early as possible. The Department of Education and Training and ADHC have processes in place for transitioning students with a moderate to severe disability into specialist ADHC provided or funded community participation and transition to work programs that provide a sound basis for commencing transition planning early in high school. 44. 4.56. Mr. Moore also recognized the importance of planning appropriately for transition points such as from school to post-school programs. There is also evidence of the efficacy of planning that is future-focused and covers the whole of life and transitional support needs of people with a disability. The lifespan approach is an important conceptual approach that represents a proactive approach to assisting people with key life stage transitions so that developmental progress is sustained and to avert crises that are often precipitated by a lack of transitional support. For example, transition from school to post-school programs is a critical period that can impact on the life's chances of people with a severe or profound disability. 4.57. In addition, Mr. Moore identified that improvement in programs such as transition to work sit within the framework of Stronger Together. Approximately half of the New South Wales State Plan target for the employment of people with a disability will be met through young people successfully completing our intensive skills-based training programs. More than half of the school leavers who participate in TTW successfully transition to employment or further education, compared with less than 5% before 2006. Had these improved results not been achieved, 1,420 fewer young people with a profound or severe disability would be in employment and there would have been an ongoing need for community participation supports. 4.58. The author of Submission 14 identified that transition planning for people with disability who are leaving high school does not take place for all students, and provided her daughter's experience as an example. She stated that there was a failure to put into place a transition plan for Amy when she left school and was entering tertiary programs. 4.59. Dr. Robert Leitner, chairperson of ADID, identified issues regarding planning for the transition of people into school. He stated that in many ADHD areas, there is a distinct lack of high-quality transition services from early intervention to school age, and then on to adult services. Specific areas of concern about ADHD's transition to school program include: there is a lack of flexibility in transition to school programs. Transition should be seamless. It needs clarity of purpose, and is well done in some rural areas, such as Nowra. Families may not be aware of ADHD service that is being provided to the child at school. ADHD feedback to other services is minimal. 44. Submission 64, p. 8. 45. Submission 31, p. 76. 46. Submission 31, pp. 22-23. 47. Submission 14, p. 9. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 11. Legislative Council - ADHD often close cases, even if the child and family have ongoing needs. There is a limited focus on working with the family in a holistic manner. The provision of intervention is not coordinated between therapists. Case management is not routinely offered or provided to families following transition. 48. 4.60. Mr. Bruce Barber, the New South Wales Ombudsman, stated that between June and August 2010, consultations were undertaken with families of children with disability regarding their experience of using the disability service system in New South Wales. Mr. Barber stated that parents communicated that they find choosing a school suited to their child's needs a daunting task, often undertaken without professional guidance. 4.61. Mr. Barber also stated that, when accessed, people praise transition to school programs run by government agencies or by early childhood intervention services. However, many families were not aware of these programs, had not accessed them, or had been unable to gain a place for their child. 49. 4.62. Dr. Leitner provided an example of an issue in the transition to school program regarding the use of a funded organization to provide the program. In some areas, transition to school programs have been outsourced to the spastic center. The service provided may be the child's only ADHD-funded intervention. The spastic center's core business is not intellectual disability, so therapists do not necessarily have expertise in this area. The spastic center's premises may not be suitable for mobile children with developmental disabilities. For example, a child may access car park onto main road at the press of a button. There may be no toys to occupy an active child not confined to a wheelchair. 50. 4.63. Dr. Leitner recommended that T. the intake process via ADHC for the transition to school therapy program run by NGOs should be simplified. There is a need for better collaboration with children's diagnostic and assessment teams and ADHC intake processes for transition to school therapy programs. 51.4.64. Mr. Barber explained that F. Amelie's also told us that transition of children with disabilities from primary to high school can be difficult, and is often complicated by delayed transition planning, and the length of time it can take to organize appropriate support. 52.4.65. Ms. Berry conveyed that many New South Wales CID members are also concerned about transition into and out of school. The impact of the education system on children with a disability, in particular transitional issues into school and out of school that results in access to less services. For example, a significant drop in access to disability services provided by ADHC and 48. Submission 94, p. 14. 49. Submission 108, Mr. Bruce Barber, New South Wales Ombudsman, p. 6. 50. Submission 94, p. 14. 51. Submission 94, p. 14. 52. Submission 108, p. 6. 12. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here within the education system and the time immediately after a person with disability leaves school. 53.4.66. Mr. Sean Lomas, Policy and Advocacy Manager from Spinal Cord Injuries Australia, identified that transition from high school can also present difficulties for service users from non-English speaking backgrounds, NESB. There are students from NESB with disability going through the school system, and when they finish school they fall off the face of the earth. They drop off because in post-school programs from AHDC we often find a very low utilization of post-school programs, which means school leavers from NESB with disability are not being transitioned to either vocational training, employment support or community motivation. 54. Committee comment 4.67. The committee sympathizes with the challenges faced by many service users and carers when transitioning into and out of the education system, including delays in transition planning. Some families receiving no transition planning at all, difficulties navigating the system, receiving less disability support services when entering education, and facing a complicated intake process. 4.68. The committee notes that both ADHC and the Department of Education acknowledge the importance of good transition planning. The committee further notes the success achieved in the Transition to Work program. 4.69. The committee is concerned by the apparent discrepancy between the statement that transition planning commences well before students leave school and service users' experiences of delay in transition planning or not receiving planning at all. The committee agrees that it is important for transition planning to take place as early as possible for our people with disability leaving school. 4.70. The committee acknowledges that the transition to school program works well when accessed, but there are barriers to people accessing this service, including issues regarding intake and awareness of the program. 4.71. The committee notes that there are fewer services available from ADHC when service users enter school. The committee believes that people with disability need to be well supported to access education, and that ADHC should ensure that adverse consequences do not result when service users transition to school. 4.72. The committee notes with concern the low utilization rates of post-school programs by people with disability from NESB. The committee believes that improved transition support and planning should be provided to people with disability from NESB who are leaving school. The committee notes that access to services for people with disability from NESB are also examined in Chapter 5. 53. Submission 39. Ms. Carol Berry, New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability, p. 9. 54. Mr. Sean Lomas, Policy and Advocacy Manager, Spinal Cord Injuries Australia, evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p. 44. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 13. Legislative Council - 4.73. The committee acknowledges the success achieved by ADHC and the Department of Education in increasing the number of people with disability who are successfully transitioning to work. 4.74. The committee acknowledges the importance of transitioning people with disability into and out of school, and recommends that transition planning policies are reviewed and amended to improve awareness about relevant programs, and ensure that early transition planning takes place. 4.75. The committee also recommends that improved support is provided for people from an ESB. Clear transition planning resources are available for service users, carers and their families, and that people with disability receive appropriate support upon entering the education system. Recommendation 5. That the Minister for Disability Services, in consultation with the Department of Education and Training, review and amend transition planning policies as part of Phase 2 of Stronger Together. That the review is conducted in consultation with relevant stakeholders, including services users, carers and their families, increases awareness of the transition to school program, ensures that all people with disability leaving school are able to access transition planning as early as possible, improves transition support and planning provided to people with disability from non-English speaking backgrounds who are leaving school, provides clear resources for service users, carers and their families who are seeking information on how to access transition planning services, ensures that people with disability receive appropriate support upon entering the education system, and that access to education does not result in adverse consequences such as a reduction in necessary services or supports. That the review and actions resulting from the review are published on ADHC's website, From Hospital to Home. 4.76. Many inquiry participants identified concerns regarding the services, supports and planning that are available to service users when transitioning from hospital to home, such as after a spinal cord injury. 55. 4.77. The author of Submission 88 questioned why there were no support services provided to her husband upon leaving hospital after an injury that rendered him quadriplegic. 55. See, for example, see Submissions 67, 88, and 98. 14. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. I can't believe that once a patient is discharged from the spinal unit in hospital, that there is no further support offered. Since leaving hospital, my husband has not had any physiotherapy, which I find astounding, and we can't afford to pay for it, and there are very few services offered to us up here in northern New South Wales. If there are services, how are we supposed to access them? Find out about them, etc. 56. 4.78. Mr. Lomas described the experience of a lady who needed to be in hospital for 6 months due to a spinal cord injury, however, remained in a Sydney hospital for a total of 2 years due to poor transition planning and support. The sheer stress of having to wait to be discharged from the hospital resulted in a nervous breakdown. This put her into a particularly bad place, and they were unable to discharge her because they were afraid that she would be at risk to herself. 57. 4.79. Mr. Lomas told the committee that the process and support available when this lady was meant to transition from hospital to her home would have been significantly improved if she was able to access the lifetime care and support scheme. That person would have been transitioned into temporary accommodation, which would have been sourced through a case manager and the whole thing sorted out. They would have got by in that instance, and they would have at least been out of the hospital setting. 58. 4.80. Ms. Jackie Dufty also experienced issues associated with poor discharge planning when her husband, who was quadriplegic, was leaving hospital. She was informed that her husband would have to wait in an aged care facility after leaving hospital until ADHC allocated funds for his home modification. 59. 4.81. Ms. Dufty stated that putting her husband into a long-term aged care facility would not constitute a proper mental well-being. It would actually regress the situation, since he has been out of hospital since the 1st of April 2009. 60. Additional information on Ms. Dufty and her husband's experience is provided in Case Study X in Chapter 10. 4.82. Spinal Cord Injuries Australia identified that it is often up to the initiative of hospital social workers to navigate the services available when people transition from hospital. Our organisation deals primarily with people with a spinal cord injury, and this means providing appropriate levels of support to individuals both in the hospital setting and the community. Where we are seeing gaps opening up in the provision of ADHC directly delivered services is in the transition between hospital and home. At present, hospital social workers are tasked with navigating the bureaucracy of applications for services and then often, through their own initiative, cobbling together a package that will at least and in some part satisfy the needs of that individual being exited to the community. 61, 56, submission 88, name suppressed, p3, 57. Mr. Lomas, evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p27, 58. Mr. Lomas, evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p27, 59. Ms. Jackie Dufty, public forum, the 30th of September 2010, p24. 60. Ms. Dufty, public forum, the 30th of September 2010, p24. 61. Submission 67. Mr. Sean Lomas and Mr. Greg Killeen, Spinal Cord Injuries Australia, p5. Report. Error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 15. Legislative Council -4.83. The Benevolent Society described how assumptions made during hospital discharge can result in a lack of support for people transitioning home. A woman from Victoria flew to Sydney to be with her elderly father while he was in hospital. He was discharged from hospital without the personal care service he would require short term during his recovery period in order to transition back to living independently at home. He was discharged without any community support being arranged, as it was assumed that his daughter was his carer and would take care of this need. 62, 4.84. In order to resolve issues regarding transition from hospital, the Benevolent Society believes that ADHC should take a lead role in cross-agency coordination and discharge planning for people with disability. ADHC should take a lead role in developing appropriate agreements and protocols with New South Wales Health to address long-standing problems such as poor or inadequate discharge planning by hospitals, failure to organise short-term post-acute care, community assistance through New South Wales compacts, and wrong assumptions made about caring relationships and responsibilities. 63, 4.85. Case study X illustrates the poor transition planning and post-hospital support that was provided to an older lady and her husband. The case study also highlights the impact that poor transition planning can have on carers and family. Case study X, name suppressed. 64. My 80-year-old husband discharged from hospital after a fall November 2008. He was very confused, and hospital said they would contact Commonwealth carers for help. Two young girls visited us, but as it was close to Christmas, they had no hours for me. ACAT aged care assessment team also phoned. No help there. I struggled as he was a big man, so confused and up and wandering around all night. I have no family to assist. Without the help of a neighbor older than me, I did not know how I would shop. He collapsed and died January 2008. 3 months after he passed away, Commonwealth carers phoned, as did ACAT. I also cancelled a doctor appointment, as they could not see him when alive. This was very upsetting for me. I wonder what use the big office Commonwealth carers has. All the advertising they do. Had a leaflet in the mail recently. When a person needs help, there is none there. He collapsed and died here at home early January 2008. 4.86. Ms. Adeline Hodgkinson, the director and chair of the New South Wales Agency for Clinical Innovation Brain Injury Rehabilitation Directorate, stated that a access to ADHC case management needs to be available as a continuation of discharge planning for adults, young people and 62. Submission 98, p10. 63. Submission 98, p10. 64. Submission 4, name suppressed, p1. 16. Report. Error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. Children with newly acquired brain injuries and needs to be more proactive to ensure transition of care from hospital to community. 65. 4.87. The committee was informed of two successful transition programs in New South Wales and Queensland. Professor James Middleton, the director and chair of the State Spinal Cord Injury Service, identified a successful initiative in Queensland that provides recurrent funding for service providers to respond to the needs of people transitioning from hospital with spinal cord injuries. In addition, a research report commissioned by Disability Services Queensland was released in June 2008, after evaluation by Griffith University of Effectiveness of an initiative called the Spinal Cord Injuries Response, SID, which followed a allocation in $2,005,106 of $1.5 million in recurrent funding to enable service providers to respond to the needs of people with spinal cord injury transitioning from hospital to the community. SID demonstrated positive outcomes in three main areas, namely client outcomes, service delivery methods and interagency integration. Shorter lengths of hospital stay with safe and efficient transitions were achieved through establishing improved processes with clearly defined roles and lines of responsibility, standardized procedures, written protocols and effective communication strategies allowing better information sharing, collaborative problem solving and resolving conflicts between agencies. For clients discharged in the 2006/07 financial year, a net saving of $681,786 was estimated. 66.4.88. The ADID identified the Southeast Sydney Illawarra Area Health Service, CGS, Agency for Clinical Innovation, ASI, transition model as a successful model that supports adolescents with complex needs to transition between different services provided by different government departments. The multidisciplinary health team based at COGGA in conjunction with the ASI Transition Network supports adolescents with complex needs in their transitions between health, disability and educational services. Many clinics are provided in collaboration with ADHC and DET, Department of Education and Training, and are conducted off-site, often in special schools such as Cairnsfoot. 67.4.89. The CGS-ASI transition model includes regular interagency meetings to support clients with complex needs and their families during transition. The ADID submission outlined the aims of the transition team to include improve access to quality health care for adolescents with developmental disabilities during the transition period from pediatric to adult services, reduce preventable presentations to ED, emergency department, and decrease prolonged hospital admissions for non-medical reasons. The significant cost savings that result from these reductions can then be used to assist funding of preventative programs. 65. Submission 101. Ms. Adeline Hodgkinson, Director and Chair, New South Wales Agency for Clinical Innovation, Brain Injury Rehabilitation Directorate, P4. 66. Submission 78. Professor James Middleton, Director and Chair, State Spinal Cord Injury Service, P2. 67. Submission 94, P26. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 17. Legislative Council - develop and establish policies and protocols for A. access to hospital, B. specialist multidisciplinary health services, and C. for disability action plans. Facilitate the development of networks between teams and individual clinicians from the pediatric and adult health facilities. Such networks will assist in development of transition pathways for clients and families carers in accordance with the framework for policy and planning of services for children and young people in New South Wales. 2008. Promote collocation conjoint clinics between pediatric and adult services for young people in transition. Ensure interagency collaboration between ADHC, DET, mental health, community health, shared care with GPs, NGOs, Carers New South Wales, Police Department and Justice Health. Develop and establish ongoing programs for staff education and promote development of KPL's quality assurance projects and outcome-based research activities. 68. Committee comment 4.90. The committee notes the concerns expressed by inquiry participants regarding the lack of services, supports and planning available to service users when transitioning from hospital to home. The committee believes that transitioning out of hospital is often a stressful time for service users and that it is essential that appropriate support is available. 4.91. The committee acknowledges the importance of providing well-planned transitional support when people leave hospital. The committee believes that people leaving hospital with inadequate support is an area of unmet need that is important to address. The committee further notes that current responsibility to complete transition planning rests with hospital social workers, which limits 88 CHC's ability to respond to particular needs of people with disability. 4.92 Assumptions made by hospital staff regarding the care that is available to people when they leave hospital can result in no support being provided. The committee believes that a system should be developed that ensures all people with disability have access to relevant support upon leaving from hospital. 4.93 The committee notes the recommendation that ADHD case management should be available as part of discharge planning, and that ADHD needs to be more proactive in ensuring transitional care is provided. The committee agrees that improved allocation of responsibility needs to be identified to ensure that all people with disability have appropriate support upon transition from hospital. 4.94 The committee believes that a coordinated approach to transition planning is required across relevant government agencies. The innovative model implemented in the CGS in conjunction with the ASI is a good example. The committee supports the expansion of this 68, submission 94, p. 26.18 report. Error: use the home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. Transition model to be applied in other area health services as a means to improve transition planning for people with disability who access multiple government services. Recommendation 6. That the New South Wales government review and amend transition policy and processes for people with disability who transition from hospital to home. That the outcome of the review ensures that people had appropriate, accessible and well-coordinated support available prior to transitioning out of hospital and during the period of readjustment to their home. The review should consider existing successful programs and models, such as the Southeast Sydney Illawarra Area Health Service Agency for Clinical Innovation Transition Model. Recommendation 7. That the New South Wales Government review and clarify current staff responsibilities in transition planning, including reviewing whether hospital social workers are the most appropriate role to conduct this planning, and whether there is a greater coordinating role for ADHD caseworkers. That the review identifies clear staff roles responsible for providing support to service users while they complete transition planning in hospital, and as they resettle in their home. That the outcomes of the review are communicated to all relevant staff. That the review identifies safeguards to prevent people with disability from being discharged from hospital with inadequate support. Recommendation 8. That the Minister for Disability Services provide ADHD case management to all ADHD service users who are being discharged from hospital. Recommendation 9. That the New South Wales Government consider the Spinal Cord Injuries Response Initiative for relevance to the New South Wales disability service sector into accommodation placements. 4.95 Transition planning for service users moving into and between accommodation placements was identified as an issue by some inquiry participants. 69. This includes issues regarding the 69. See, for example, see submissions 14, 47, 49, and 50. Report. Error: use the home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 19. Legislative Council - creation of a transition plan following appropriate policy when new residents transition into an established group home, and the conduct of ADHD staff when transitioning service users. 4.96 ADHD's allocation of places in supported accommodation policy was identified by the author of submission 47. The policy states, a transition plan will be developed for each person who accepts an offer of supported accommodation to facilitate a move that meets the person's needs. At the beginning of the transition, residents residing in the accommodation service and their families and carer will be informed that a new person will be moving into the service. During the transition, there will be opportunities for all residents and families to meet each other. 70. 4.97 The author of submission 47 believes that this policy was not followed during the transition of a new client into the group home that his brother resided in, as the placement resulted in violations of personal space, protested physical contact, bedroom and bathroom entries while in use. He also stated that ADHD staff bullied the funded organization's staff during the transition period. The transition period was continued, even though this contravened ADHD's own documented standard for service entry, which states, page 1.1.2, an agency has a procedure to involve existing residents of a group home in deciding overall compatibility and in selecting new residents. In this case, the service provider and the current three residents all objected to the placement, but ADHD proceeded with the placement. It is, at best, Poor practice to insist that a provider accepts a new resident whom they clearly believe is unsuitable in this particular household. 71. 4.98. Issues raised by inquiry participants regarding ADHC staff are examined in Chapter 11. 4.99. The author of Submission 14 explained that inappropriate transition planning took place when a new resident entered the group home that her daughter Amy lived in, stating the house was too small to accommodate all residents and no transition plan had been developed for the new resident. She also stated Amy stayed back home with her mother for 5 months, while a slow gradual transition could take place. As per planning meeting, recommendations of name suppressed and Amy's teachers. Whilst Amy was at home with her mother, DADHC moved another resident into the house overnight without any transition or compatibility assessment and without any consultation or involvement with Amy or her parents, as recommended by name suppressed and Amy's teachers. 72. 4.100. Ms. Maloney expressed fear at the prospect of transitioning her 17-year-old child from Kingsdene Special School into the ADHC service system once he turns 18 years of age, as she has not seen any progress or forward planning, or proactive or preventive planning. That terrifies the living daylights out of me, because when Charlie turns 18 we will be left with no service option other than the ADHC services. 73. 70. Submission 47. Name suppressed. P2. 71. Submission 47. P2. 72. Submission 14. PP 10 and 12. 73. Ms. Maloney, Public Forum, Evidence, P18. 20. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 4.101. Ms. Armstrong told the committee that people with disability commonly move between accommodation services in both ADHC-funded and provided services. The view of official community visitors is that this activity is mostly focused on the needs of the service provider rather than the person with the disability. People with a disability are often moved across or within services to meet funding and resource needs, and the policies and procedures that guide this process are either non-existent, vague and or poorly implemented. 74. 4.102. The author of Submission 50 suggested that the compatibility of residential care needs to be closely monitored and managed. Judgments need to be responsibly and professionally conducted to ensure suitable placement of residents and staff, to ensure the care is consistent with special needs of all parties concerned. Collaborative work with other relevant agencies and departments needs to be developed and enhanced to ensure that people with disabilities, special and additional needs are being met as full members of the community and society. 75. 4.103. Case study X provides an example of ADHC's transition policy not being followed when a new resident was being moved into an established group home. It illustrates the impact this has on existing residents and their families, and the significant disruption and stress that poor planning causes. Case Study X, Ms. Valerie Noon. 76. I would like to give you a brief overview of my dealings with the Department of Aging, Disability and Home Care. These have been in regard to my younger sister, a 51-year-old Down syndrome lady. She has been in the care of the current service provider for 9 years and we have always been very happy with the service she has received from them. The service provider is funded by ADHC. The death of one of the female household members created a vacancy in the home. The remaining household members included my sister and two males in their 40s and 50s, both of whom have Down syndrome and are quiet and gentle. ADHC has some wonderful policies and guidelines regarding the placement of a new resident into a group, which would include the involvement of the existing residents in the choice of the replacement, as the resident has the right to feel safe and have their privacy and dignity respected. My sister requested a female resident. ADHC decided to ignore all its policies and practices and act upon a provision that allowed it to direct the placement as it sees fit. What it saw fit was the placement of a 28-year-old fully autistic male, who was nearly half the age of the other household members and with an extremely different disability. A long transitioning process of a directed placement began. It was late in this process that my familiar and I became involved with ADHC over the transitioning period of the new resident into the home. 74. Submission 41. P6, 75, submission 50, name suppressed, P2, 76, Ms. Valerie Noon, public forum, the 30th of September 2010, P13, report error, use the home tab to apply cover date to the text, that you want to appear here, 21, legislative council, dash, our sister, who was quite small, became fearful of the new resident and some of his obsessive behaviors. By this time we were becoming quite alarmed for our sister's safety. We requested ADHC to reconsider its choice of resident as we thought it was unsuitable. The other residents objected to him, and the service provider also raised a number of concerns, all of which were ignored. So, insisting that the placement go ahead, the needs of the other three residents were completely disregarded. Last December the transitioning of the new resident was completed, and he moved in permanently. After this, over a period of months, the unacceptable incidents between my sister and the new resident escalated. At this point, even ADHC agreed that it could no longer guarantee my sister's safety. Committee comment 4.104. The committee sympathizes with the frustration experienced by many inquiry participants in relation to inappropriate transition planning, and the transition of inappropriate service users into group homes. The stress placed on families as a result of inappropriate transition planning has resulted in the displacement of service users in well-established accommodation options and represents an area of the service system that requires improvement. 4.105. The committee notes with concern that some funded services may not prioritize person-centered planning for service users. While transition policies have been developed by ADHC, the committee was told that it appeared that some staff are unaware of the policies or do not understand them. 4.106. The committee acknowledges that many of the concerns regarding accommodation transition were often not adequately handled by ADHC or funded organizations. The committee recommends that current policy regarding transition planning in accommodation services is understood and implemented by all relevant staff. 4.107. The committee notes that recommendations regarding the handling of complaints and grievances are provided in Chapter 9, Recommendation 10, that the Minister for Disability Services ensure that current policy regarding transition planning in accommodation services is understood and implemented by all relevant staff, to ensure that a person-centered approach is implemented for both the person who is transitioning into accommodation options and existing residents. Cross-agency service planning. 4.108. The ADID identified barriers in the sharing of service user information between government agencies for service users who access services and supports from more than one government agency. It was stated that this reduces the ability for all agencies to plan appropriately and impacts on the quality of care provided. 22. Report error. Use the home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 4.109. Professor Julian Troller, ADID, identified that disability service records for individuals are inaccessible. He stated, if you come into our A&E, accident and emergency service here, you might have a community mental health file, you might have a hospital mental health file, you might have an A&E file, a hospital medical record, and then you have disability sector, which is entirely inaccessible. So the information cannot be integrated in any meaningful way. I think it really is an artificial separation. 77. 4.110. Professor Troller explained that inaccessible information reduces the ability for professionals such as hospital staff to provide whole-of-care services to people, and reduces the quality of care that is provided. If you are looking at the whole-of-care for somebody, social services need to talk to health, the speech therapist needs to talk to the physician, the accommodations manager needs to be able to talk to the general practitioner. So you need all of these parts of the puzzle essentially in one room, or at least with one frame of reference and the ability to refer to the same set of documents. We simply do not have that. It is an artificial separation which certainly in our view diminishes the quality of care, in particular mental health, but I think the whole of health. 78. 4.111. Dr. Helen Somerville, also from the ADID, stated T. Here is a lot of confusion about the term confidentiality and sharing records. Dr. Somerville identified that sometimes very serious meetings take place, that they did contribute to through making health recommendations, and that these meetings can result in recommendations such guardianship changes. Dr. Somerville is concerned that her organization is unable to get any record of what has happened, and the reasons for this relate to confusion of what confidentiality means in this context. 79.4.112. In regard to confidentiality, Dr. Richard Matthews, Deputy Director General, Strategic Development, New South Wales Health, explained that confidentiality and the exchange of this information is not an issue if you have consented, and that it is a matter of putting instructions out about it. 80.4.113. Dr. Matthews also identified an example of where a good system has been put in place that allows for the sharing of confidential information. What we have managed to achieve in another area around Keep Them Safe for Kids Who Are at Risk is a really outstanding example of how agencies can get together and put in place an information system that enables, in that case, approximately 7 or 8 agencies to appropriately share information. It can be an issue, but in this particular case where you really do have a patient or person for whom you are trying. 77/Prof. Julian Troller, Association of Doctors in Development Disability, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p. 378/Prof. Troller, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p. 379. Dr. Helen Somerville, Association of Doctors in Development Disability, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p. 480. Dr. Richard Matthews, Deputy Director General Strategic Development, New South Wales Health, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p. 31. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 23. Legislative Council - to put together some structures to assist them. As I say, if you cannot get consent from the patient, the parent or guardian, then there is something wrong with you as a practitioner, in my view. 81.4.114. Professor Troller explained there are pockets where collaboration takes place between ADHC and New South Wales Health and information is shared well. He also identified that these pockets work very well by nature of the personalities involved, but for the vast majority it does not work. 82.4.115. Dr. Somerville noted that where the sharing works, it works beautifully. In rural areas, it is fantastic because you all have to get on because you all live in the same town, so sharing between health and ADHC is often much better in smaller communities. 83.4.116. Dr. Somerville stated that she experiences great collaboration with ADHC because she has a nurse that is funded, albeit insecurely, by ADHC. It has taken us a long time to build that up. The fact that you have two departments sharing patients means that you share information. I do not know where it has come from, but over the years we have tried to make them understand what confidentiality means and that the sharing of information is what is best for patient-client care, and there is a very difficult understanding of that. 84.4.117. Professor Troller told the committee that a memorandum of understanding, MOU, has been developed between mental health and ADHC, which may provide a philosophical agreement to work together in a certain way and framework. 85. However, Professor Troller does not believe that the MOU will be very effective unless you have a fundamental change in the system whereby there is designated funding that is handed down and administered by people who are not bound by the aging, disability and home care health, the us and them boundary. It will not get very far. 86.4.118. Dr. Matthews advised the committee that the MOU has almost been completed, however, has not been finalized by the Directors General. 87.4.119. Mr. Moore identified that ADHC is working with New South Wales Health around how the health system can cater better for the special needs of people with disability. Mr. Moore noted, we have been providing some resources in Stronger Together to try to get within the medical processes a better sensitivity to disability issues, but it is difficult. 88.81. Dr. Matthews, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p. 31. 82/Prof. Troller, Evidence, the 27th of August 2010, p. 483. Dr. Somerville, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p. 484. Dr. Somerville, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p. 4. 85/Prof. Chawla, Evidence, 27 August 2010, p. 4. 86/Prof. Chawla, Evidence, 27 August 2010, p. 4. 87. Dr. Matthews, Evidence, 27 September 2010, p. 27. 88. Mr. Moore, Evidence, 27 September 2010, p. 11. 24. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 4.120. Mr. Moore stated that the T.E. number of times people with a disability and their families have to go through health systems to satisfy us that we have got the right healthcare plans in place is excessive. He identified the number of times that GPs need to provide us a statement that a person with a disability has a disability in order to complete the right forms for going to various respite providers is absurd. That is something that we need to tackle. We have tried to streamline some things, but it is quite clear that we have not gone near far enough. There must be ways in which we can have a much less repetitive requirement placed on people as to how they engage with the health system. 4.121. Ms. Lauren Murray, Deputy Director General, ADHC, described some of the work that is taking place between ADHC and New South Wales Health to improve medical health outcomes for people with intellectual disability. In terms of what we are doing with New South Wales Health, New South Wales Health has just put together a framework for looking at improving medical health outcomes for people with intellectual disability. There has been a significant injection of funds to look at a billot around clinical nurse specialists in terms of looking at TRIDGE and building relations heaps across the health sector. They are the types of services being piloted. In a sense, we don't know a great deal about what are the particular types of things that would assist people with intellectual disability to get better health outcomes. This is a way of trying to assess that. 89. 4.122. Ms. Catherine Lynch, Director, Primary Health and Community Partnerships, New South Wales Health also reflected on some of the work that is taking place between ADHC and New South Wales Health to improve outcomes for people with intellectual disability. We are working on a lot of things with aging, disability and home care, but another one is the hospitalisation of people with an intellectual disability as well. We ensure that when those people come to hospital their communication needs, or the way in which they are looked after, are accounted for in hospital. In addition, we are working with ADHC to have carers present, whether it be a carer from ADHC or a member of a person's own family, to support him or her in the hospital environment and to work with and communicate with staff about supporting that person at the same level or probably a little less, to tell you the truth, because hospital staff are there all the time. But if people need some support in the home to do everyday activities, they might need that support also in hospital. For instance, some people need help with feeding themselves and that kind of thing. 90. Committee comment. 4.123. The committee recognises the importance of effective collaboration between agencies such as the New South Wales Health and ADHC in providing quality support to people who access services from more than one agency. The committee acknowledges the positive contribution that good. 89. Ms. Lauren Murray, Deputy Director General, Aging, Disability and Home Care, Evidence, 27 September 2010, p. 12. 90. Ms. Catherine Lynch, Director, Primary Health and Community Partnerships, New South Wales Department of Health, Evidence, 27 September 2010, p. 28. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 25. Legislative Council - Collaboration and Information Sharing, Make an Improving Service Planning and the Quality of Care that is provided to service users who access services from multiple agencies. 4.124. The committee believes that good collaboration between government agencies should not depend on the nature of the personalities involved. The committee believes that there should be systems in place to ensure consistent and quality collaboration between ADHC and health across all of New South Wales. 4.125. The committee notes the lack of consistency and sharing information between ADHC and the New South Wales Department of Health, and that there are different understandings regarding the meaning and application of confidentiality requirements. The committee further notes that a conflicting understanding of the application of confidentiality requirements for cleaned information may result in decreased quality of service provision. 4.126. The committee believes that work is required to be undertaken by both of these agencies to clarify what confidentiality means in the context of health and disability service provision. The committee further believes that a consistent understanding and implementation of confidentiality requirements could improve the quality of care provided to people with disability. 4.127. The committee recognizes the achievements and keep them safe regarding the sharing of confidential information between agencies for children who are at risk. The committee believes that lessons from this should be applied to the sharing of sensitive client information between ADHC and New South Wales Health. 4.128. The committee acknowledges the work that is being completed by ADHC and New South Wales Health to improve the health outcomes of people with disability, including the mental health and ADHC MAO. The committee further notes that no evidence was received from accrediting the sharing of sensitive client information with New South Wales Health. 4.129. The committee notes that people with disability face unnecessary challenges when navigating between the disability and health system, including being required to obtain multiple statements from their GP in order to complete ADHC forms to access services. The committee recognizes that ADHC has attempted to streamline this process and is aware that further work is required to improve the process. 4.130. The committee recommends that the process by which ADHC and New South Wales Health share sensitive information about service users who access both agencies is reviewed to improve the quality of care that is provided. 4.131. The committee believes that the requirement for people with long-term disability to obtain multiple statements from general practitioners to confirm their disability when accessing ADHC services is unnecessary and creates an obstacle for people to access services. The committee recommends that this requirement be amended to allow the general practitioner's statement to be valid for varying time periods that are relevant to the disability and needs of the individual. 26. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. Recommendation 11. That the New South Wales Government review and amend the process by which ADHC and New South Wales Health share sensitive information about service users who access both agencies. That the review develops and applies a common understanding of the meaning of confidential information in the context of health and disability service user information sharing. Identifies how confidential information can be shared between agencies to improve the quality of services provided, including considering issues of consent. Learns from the successful models of information sharing between ADHC and New South Wales Health that exist in some regions. Learns from the achievements of information sharing and keep them safe and applies them as appropriate. That the report resulting from the review and ADHC response to recommendations are published on the website. Recommendation 12. That the New South Wales Government amend the requirement for people with disability to obtain multiple statements from general practitioners to confirm their disability when accessing ADHC services, to allow the general practitioner's statement to be valid for varying periods of time that are relevant to the disability and needs of the individual. Report error. Use the Home tab to apply cover date to the text that you want to appear here. 27.